Siobhan Powers, and I'm just going to say, don't judge me. I was young, I was enthusiastic, and it seemed like a good idea at the time. I lived in Europe when my children were 3 and 7 years old, and I had the idea that we would do some traveling while we were there. And at this stage of their lives, my children had very distinct personalities. My 7-year-old, we'll call him the town crier. And it was his mission in life to keep everyone informed about all pertinent details of family life. If something happened in our house, everybody knew about it. The neighbors, the classmates' families. Our life was an open book. My younger child was what those of us who work in preschool education like to call a spirited child. In case you don't know what a spirited child is, a spirited child is a child who has his or her own ideas about pretty much everything and the fortitude to carry them out. Think Energizer Bunny meets General Custer. So these are the two little personalities that that I live with, and we're in the Netherlands, which is a wonderful country which believes that every family should have 6 weeks of vacation a year. We have to love that. So I become the family travel agent, and because I'm a teacher, I think that, you know, travel is not only fun, it's educational. And so, you know, I embrace the spirit of we're going to travel and we're going to learn and we're going to have wonderful adventures as a family. So I'm going to give you just a little bit more background on the spirited child. This is the child who, on our very first trip to a Dutch shopping mall, I turned to hold up a pair of pants to the older child, and he was gone. He was out the door. He was on the street, and I created an international incident with the store detectives trying to find him. And then subsequently, the town crier went to school and shared this interesting anecdote with all of his classmates and all of his classmates' families. And you know, the mothers, as mothers do, gave me a great deal of helpful advice on how to manage my spirited child. So when I began planning a family adventure, which was going to be a 10-day train trip through Italy with my 3-year-old and my 7-year-old, I was young. So one of the mothers who had a spirited child of her own suggested that I should use a harness. And I sort of said, well, you know, I don't really feel very comfortable with that, and that's not, and she kept saying to me, you're going to feel terrible if something happens to him. And I, of course, would have felt terrible if something happened to him. So, you know, she kept making this point to me. And so I said, all right, I'll take the harness with me. So we head off on our trip. We get on the train. We're going to Paris, which is where we're going to change trains. And as I get off the train in Paris, and we have so much luggage, more luggage than any sane people would ever take with them anywhere. But, you know, the children don't carry anything because they're 3 and they're 7 and they don't think that they need to. So we have the stroller and we have the bags and we have the car seat, and I don't have a free hand for anything. And I get off the platform, the train, and I'm thinking how wise my friend was to recommend that I take this harness. And I step onto the platform feeling so free that my child is, he's going to be safe and everything is wonderful. And I take about 3 steps on the platform and then I can't go any further. And the reason that I can't go any further is the spirited child is sitting down on the platform trying to undo the buckles on the harness. And he's twisting and he's turning, and I kind of do this, you know, kind of like see if I can maybe pull him along the platform a little bit. But that doesn't actually work very well. Meanwhile, the town crier is skipping ahead saying, just leave him, Mom. So, but I can't really do that. So so I go back and you know, in my best preschool teacher manner, I try to convince him, and he ignores me, and, you know, he continues to twist. He's like Houdini, you know, the... He's contorting his body, and he's wriggling, and he's turning, and, you know, he just kind of looks at me and continues to work on the harness, and I beg, I plead, I cajole, and I can hear the French people, and I'm not fluent in French, but I do know the word for dog. And I know the word for disgraceful. So I cave in to international peer pressure, and I take the harness off, and I hold his hand, and we proceed down the train platform with me dropping bags every few feet and stopping to pick them up. And we finally get to, you know, the next platform where we have to go, and my husband looks at the tickets and says, well, we have 4 hours until the next train comes, and we should put our luggage in a locker and go for a sightseeing tour of Paris. So I say, okay, and we put the luggage in a locker, and we get a taxi, and we go to see l'Arc de Triomphe and Notre Dame and, of course, the Eiffel Tower. And then we get back to the train station, where it turns out that there's a tiny little problem, that my husband did not read the time on the tickets correctly, and our train has actually left. And I should mention that we had tickets on a sleeper car, which the children were very excited about, because the sleeper car has beds, and it's special. And so the railway agrees to honor our tickets on the next train, but they don't have any more sleeper cars, and they're going to give us a seat on a car that is not special and has other people in it. So we get into the car that is not special and has strange people in it, and we're going to take this train overnight, and we'll wake up in Italy, we think. And so there's a lot of moaning about the lack of beds and specialness. And finally, the kids get to sleep, and I have all the passports zippered inside my coat because I think that maybe the strange people in the train compartment with us might steal our passports. So everybody finally nods off, and then we cross the border into Switzerland. Peaceful, quiet, Switzerland. And the door to the train compartment bursts open, and the lights come on, and there's the conductor demanding to see everyone's passport. So, you know, I get out the passports, but the spirited child is not a fan of the passport check, and he gets up and begins berating the conductor for turning on the lights and waking everybody up in the middle of the night. And I'm sitting there thinking, dear God, I hope he doesn't speak English very well. And so, you know, I'm kind of putting my hand over his mouth while I'm giving the conductor the passports, and we finally get through that. Everybody goes back to sleep, and we wake up the next morning, and we're almost to our station in Italy, and we really need to get off this train because we're not where we're supposed to be. We've got to get back to another train, and if we don't get off at this platform, I'm not really sure where we're going to wind up. So we gather up our very cranky children and our excessive amounts of luggage, and we're trying to get off the train in Turin. And, you know, we have everybody, and they're all behind us. And if you've ever been on a train in Europe, that there are very narrow aisles as you're getting off the train. And so I can see the door, and I can see the platform. But there's a gentleman who's had a rather festive evening, and he's blocking the aisle because he's being sick in the bathroom, but he isn't all the way in the bathroom. So he's got the door open and he's in the aisle, and I have my children and my husband and all the other passengers behind me, and I can hear the conductor saying, all aboard, you know, and the whistle is tooting, and this guy is, he's standing between me and where I need to go. And I'm looking at him, and, you know, I'm not a big person, but, you know, sometimes as a mom, you do what you need to do. And I grew up with a bunch of hockey playing boys, so I hip checked him into the bathroom and I shut the door, and all the passengers cheered, and we got off the platform in Turin. And that was the first day.